The scenic, peaceful views of the Bavarian Alps are in contrast with the urgent and grim crisis the seven leaders of the world's highest income countries have to tackle. Just before German Chancellor Olaf Scholz greeted his guests, Russian rockets hit the Ukrainian capital Kyiv. It was seen as a message from President Vladimir Putin to the leaders of the G7 who want to impose more sanctions on Russia, like an export ban on gold.
Mr. President, do you have a reaction to the Russian missile strikes on the apartment building in Kyiv?
The U.S. president replied, calling it more of Russia's barbarism. Leaders of the G7 want to show a united front against Putin and their common support for Ukraine. But their unity is increasingly under pressure now that the fallout of the war is affecting more and more people worldwide, including in G7 countries.
All G7 countries are concerned about the crises that we have to deal with. Some countries see shrinking growth rates, increasing inflation, shortage of goods and disruption of supplies. These are not small challenges. Together we have to take responsibility. But I'm very confident that we will send a clear signal of unity from the summit.
The most urgent signal aid organizations are waiting for is a clear plan on how to tackle food shortages as a consequence of the war.
It's a call on President Putin to stop the war, to stop the invasion, because his action is affecting millions of people very far from where he thought he was having his war. So that is the call. But beyond that as well is to think about how do we de-escalate? How do we talk about, how do we get everybody on the table? It is time to think about the lives of those who are affected and end this crisis as soon as possible.
A survey held ahead of the summit shows that while most Europeans feel solidarity with Ukraine and support the sanctions against Russia, many are worried about the economic cost of the war and they want the war to end as soon as possible. They also not necessarily want to boost military support for Ukraine, a message leaders here may have to take into account. Stapfausen, Al Jazeera in Garmisch-Partenkirchen.
Well, also joining us from there is our diplomatic editor, James Bays, covering the summit as well. So, James, first on the announcement on the infrastructure project, how significant is it?
Well, we'll have to see, I think, but it's certainly a redo. You just have to rewind 12 months. 1 year ago, the G7 wasn't here. It was in Cornwall in the UK, and there they came up with a plan that was known as a rather awkward title, Build Back Better World, B3W. That was going to be a global infrastructure plan. Nothing really actually much happened after that. And it seems that they are trying to reboot the idea. It has a new name now. It's Partnership for Global Infrastructure and Investment, and a new acronym. It's PGII. And the plan is to rival the Belt and Road Initiative of China to try and put infrastructure around the world and to show that it's something that democratic countries are doing. And President Biden was very keen to stress that. This is what democracies can do if they work together. I think that's a little bit of a dig at China, but also, of course, at Russia at this time of the war in Ukraine.
Right. And, James, as the leaders landed in Germany, there were missile strikes that hit Kyiv. The first time the capital has been targeted in a number of weeks, in fact. What's been the reaction from leaders at the G7?
Condemnation, as you'd expect, but also I think the general view that it's really no coincidence that this happened on this date, that it was almost certainly a message from Vladimir Putin to the G7 leaders, because of course there are two summits back to back, the G7, then they go off to NATO in Madrid. And Ukraine will be centre stage on the second day of this summit. They've nearly finished the first day. They're now going to go to the formal dinner that takes place in that luxury castle where they are currently residing. But the second day, the Monday here at the G7 is going to be, I think the focus is again going to be on Ukraine, because they're going to be addressed by President Zelensky. He's not here, but he's going to address them virtually. And I think you'll get a strong message from him condemning Russia again, but calling on the G7 and later in the week NATO to do much, much more and give more money and more weapons.
OK, James, thank you so much. Our diplomatic editor, James Bays, is reporting for us from Germany. Well, more now on those strikes in Kyiv that James was mentioning. It's the first time the Ukrainian capital has been targeted in weeks. The Russian missiles hit a residential building, a military site, and a kindergarten. Officials say one person was killed and five injured. Kyiv's mayor, Vitaly Klitschko, told Al Jazeera the timing of this latest attack is not a coincidence.
before right now the summit NATO, they attacked. It's maybe symbolic aggression during these days. It's symbolic attack because the last attack, it was as General Secretary United Nations visited Kyiv. Is this no reason? It's senseless war where died thousands and thousands of civilians.
Charles Stratford reports from the scene.
The building behind me, civilian residential building hit. We understand this morning by at least one cruise missile. We're told that another one landed in the near vicinity. Also, there have been civilian casualties. There are ongoing rescue efforts, we understand, to try and free one woman injured, possibly feared dead. Her daughter was taken away, badly injured a few minutes ago. Her husband also severely injured, no signs of life when he was taken away in an ambulance. That's what we've been told. I mean, you can see the level of destruction and the power of these missiles. To say these two of four that hit the capital Kyiv in the early hours of this morning.
The Ukrainian military says at least 14 missiles hit various locations in the Kyiv region early Sunday morning.
We have saved a young girl, approximately 8 years old. Her mother is still under the rubble. We are finding it difficult to remove the debris, but the situation is under control.
We heard the missile come in. This is not the first time this area has been hit, so we knew we just had 2-3 seconds to take cover. After the explosions, we came outside to ask neighbors if they were okay. Then we heard the fourth rocket coming in, and we ran for cover.
An hour or so later, emergency services carried an injured woman from the destroyed block of flats.
This is one of the other strike sites close by. What you're looking at there is a kindergarten. Now, it's Sunday. The school is not open today, but look at the size of this crater. It gives you some sort of idea of the power of the weaponry that the Russians are using, according to locals. They heard the explosion around about 6:15 this morning. Residents in the building behind me on the right believe that at least one person has been injured as a result of this strike. Bear in mind that according to the Ukrainian government, this kindergarten is one of more than 800 schools that have been damaged since the war began on February the 24th. Charles Stratford, Al Jazeera, Kyiv.
Well, civilians have been fleeing areas around the eastern city of Severodonetsk after it fell to Russian control. The advance by Moscow's forces followed what Ukraine's military described as a tactical withdrawal. It was the biggest setback for Ukraine in more than a month. Pro-Russian separatists say Russian troops are now attacking the neighboring city of Lysychansk.
It was a horror over the past week. Yesterday, we couldn't take it anymore. Thank you to the soldiers who evacuated us from there. Otherwise, this would have been it. I already told my husband, if I die, please bury me behind the house. There was so much shelling, so many ruined houses. It was no good to stay there.
Planes keep flying. It's impossible to sleep. And they're flying so low. When I lay on a sofa near the window and looked, the plane was so low I could see the pilot. So low, and the sound was horrible. The wings so huge, the size of two houses, so scary.
Well, G7 leaders are expected to announce a ban on imports of Russian gold. The commodity is Moscow's biggest export after oil and gas. Western countries have already frozen the assets of Russia's central bank, cutting the country off from $630 billion in foreign currency reserves. And some Russian banks have been removed from the international financial messaging system, SWIFT. Russia is due to make an interest payment of $100 million on Sunday. But the Kremlin says sanctions make it impossible to get payments to international creditors. Let's speak to Glenn Deason, who's a professor of international relations at the University of Southeastern Norway. He's joining us from Oslo. Welcome to Al Jazeera, Glenn Deason. So what we do expect an official announcement on Tuesday regarding the ban on Russian gold. Will this worry Russia, considering that gold exports are a major source of revenue for the country?
It could, because, well, gold is an important export for Russia, and these sanctions could cause more problems for Russia for that reason. However, it could also alternatively have the same effect as the sanctions had on energy, because when the NATO countries began to put sanctions on oil and gas, what we saw was that the price rose significantly to the point when Russia could simply export less, but still made much more money than it did in the past. And also one of the reasons is because it's pretty much just the NATO countries sanctioning Russia, or the G7 now with the gold. So Russia can then continue to export its energy or gold to the rest of the world.
Right.
So I think that this could happen with gold as well. That is, gold prices could increase, and Russia could merely sell less gold to other parts of the world, but still make more money.
Ray, but doesn't this add more pressure on the central bank in particular? Because gold is an important asset for the central bank, and the central bank is already operating under limited conditions, as you know.
No, definitely. So I think that this is an area which could cause much more pain for Russia. It remains to be seen how devastating or how painful this would be. As we see, the West is quite determined to try to break the Russian economy. So we're seeing many initiatives. Now, gold, obviously, this is followed by this blockade of Kaliningrad, which, well, by the way, could be considered an act of war. So the sanctions are getting stronger, somewhat more desperate, but also therefore more dangerous. So I think it's unpredictable. It's hard to say how the sanctions on gold, what effect it will have. Obviously, you mentioned that when the West stole half of Russia's central bank's foreign reserves, this was also a huge hit, and it's unprecedented. So it's unpredictable how it would affect Russia. But again, Russia pulled through in this instance as well. So I think it's very hard to predict because, again, we're going into uncharted waters here,
right,
in terms of sanctions.
Let me just ask you about this interest payment that Russia is due to make on Sunday. It's $100 million. Some people say a default is now inevitable. Do you think that a default is going to happen? And if so, what impact will that have on the Russian economy?
Well, I think, well, Russia has plenty of money, so it can pay. That's not really the problem. I think that the United States is working very hard for a technical default in terms of its canceling these licenses, which are required to make payments in dollars. So what Russia is saying instead is it's not simply going to start paying the bondholders in rubles. So I think, again, it's an interest to within the U.S. to destroy the trust in the Russian economy. But I think probably the rest of the world will see this as simply being a technical default in terms of the U.S. essentially blocking Russia, preventing it from paying bondholders. So I wouldn't call it a default in the regular sense of what we assume defaults are, which is government being insolvent, not able to pay its debts anymore.
All right. Thank you so much, Glenn Deason, for speaking to us from Oslo.